Rebuilding Your Life, Moving from Disaster to Prosperity with Susan Chiraco, where we help you transform your life by changing what you're telling yourself. Whatever your circumstances, you can experience health, financial security, and a sense of well-being once again. And now, here's your host, Susan Chiraco.
On behalf of Rebuilding Your Life Radio and the Train Your Brain, Claim Your Power calls, welcome. Today, David Peters joins us to discuss his book, The 12 Steps to Joy and Happiness, Finding the Kingdom of God That Lies Within, Luke 17:21. David worked as an engineer on flight simulators. And in fact, he was just recently named to the Simulator Hall of Fame. So let's wave our hands to welcome and celebrate his award. Welcome, David Peters.
Well, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us today. You'll have to tell us more about how that all came to be. I know we spoke earlier and you mentioned that you didn't even plan to be where you were when this all started. You had new ideas and different things you planned to do with your life. And isn't that funny how life takes us in a different direction?
It is. It is. It's somewhat self-directed. It's, you know, when the opportunity comes, you walk into it, and I think that's the key. When there's an opportunity, you take it.
So what opportunity did you take?
My first opportunity when I graduated from college, I was 25 at that point. It took me several years to determine what I wanted to do before heading off to college. And I had an opportunity for a PhD in a totally different topic. And at the same time, I got this wonderful job offer in New York. I'm from Ohio originally, and I had never seen New York. And I said, I'd like to do that for a couple of years. So I did. And I went out there, and it turns out by sheer accident, I happened to be offered the opportunity to work for the founders of television. These are the people that back in the 1930s. Now, I graduated from college in 1959. So I'm an old guy. I'm 86, almost 87. And at that point, just serendipity, I got this opportunity, and they asked me, do you want it? And I said, sure. So I got some wonderful insights into how the human brain and I see things and what they do when they see things, how it works. So that's part of the fundamentals of actually television is the signal compression that they use. And you can't tell it at all. It looks so wonderful. And from that, I just had one opportunity presented after another. I met my beautiful bride-to-be on Long Island, and we married in 1961. And I just did the opportunities that I saw. When I saw a chance, I'm a pretty good writer, so I started writing proposals. I started, and therefore I was put up in charge of lots of jobs, major jobs, and because I can explain things fairly well, I was asked to give a lot of talks, which is somewhat abusing to me because I have a stammer that creeps in now and then. Back in those days, it was actually much worse. And life just went on.
It's amazing how it flows. But now this past year, of course, this is a year that we all look at and go, oh, my gosh, what on earth happened here? It's been a mixed bag for you, hasn't it?
It's been very hard. My wife was diagnosed with cancer in February of 19. And she died on February 22nd, 20 of this year. And the mixed bag of that was that she died on February 22nd. On 21st, I got two phone calls. The first was from my son saying that his wife had just given birth to this little girl, the beautiful little girl, Eileen, opened her eyes up, and she saw the pictures, and I think that's what she was waiting for. And she died the next day. And about an hour later, I got a phone call saying I was given this honor of actually being on the Hall of Fame in Florida, and I was shocked, to put it mildly. So it's but then the next day, of course, my wife died, and then the funeral was on March 3rd, and right after that, we got hit with the pandemic. And then, on top of that, my brother, who was older than I am, he was at 91, fell on April 1st and was taken to the hospital and came home on June 1st. So I went out to Ohio to help take care of him coming home, and I spent 6 weeks with him over that summer. But he died in October of this year. So this has been a difficult year.
I would say so. I mean, it's one thing to have to endure the privacy and the, you know, limitations of our lifestyle right now, but to face all of that as well is really challenging. What supported you through all of this?
What supported me was my love of God and the recognition that God loves me. I talk about there in the book about joy and happiness. It's primarily a choice, and to find that, you know, that God lives within. That's what Jesus had said, and as such, I think we think that when we go to heaven, it's all going to be light and joy and on a cloud. But I don't think so. I think heaven is like earth. There's some challenges. I think God weeps, just like Jesus did. I think God joins us in our pain and supports us in truth. And if you just open yourself up, that's what you understand. And that's what has supported me this year, just like it has all my life. But especially this year, I understand that in a totally different sense than having gone through a lot of pain internally. And is the pain there? Sure. But this is where God has led me today. And how could I fulfill the opportunities that God is presenting me today to help others in their pain?
Well, that's you know, it's easy to I don't mean that easy, because that's the wrong word, but we tend to take our you know, our training or our education from the church normally. That's where we start if we are on a religious path,
yeah,
of any kind. But what were the kinds of books or were the sources that came to you that that helped instill this kind of firm relationship, and I'm going to call it not just a belief, but a relationship,
yeah,
with these ideas of God and the kingdom of God and being within you?
What started? I was raised on a farm, a farmland out in Ohio, and there was nobody my age, anywhere near my age, anywhere close by. They were all much older. And so I used to wander the fields as a 4-year-old, 5-year-old, which I can recall very strongly. And I had nobody but myself. And God and I became very friendly. I was blessed with parents who were very firm believers. I am Roman Catholic, and they were both very hardworking within a church, very hardworking people, and I was blessed with tons of love. So as I grew older, of course, like anybody, that your faith shifts a bit. So my older brother, I only have the one sibling, and he gave me the book, The Seven Story Mountain by Thomas Merton. And I don't know how many 14-year-olds sit on the front porch of reading a 500-page book about somebody's journey to God. But I did. And that proved to be an absolutely wonderful breakthrough about the relationship between myself and God. And it moved me from a childhood faith that I was questioning at that point into a more adult relationship to where I can begin to talk to God. And I've talked to God all my life, just chatted. Back when I was a young father, there was a church, a Catholic church not far from me that had Mass every noon, and I would go when I could from work, and afterwards I would just walk up to the altar and sit down and talk. And that's been my mode of operation, you might say, all my life. I was taught to give, to share by my parents, and both my wife and I came from that kind of strong belief, and we were given opportunities to help people. People say, well, you've done so much. I started organizations working with the farm workers and things of this nature. And they said, how do you do it? I said, well, you see an opportunity, and you just step forward, and you watch what develops. And it's possible to be a moving force for good if you just watch. And then when you see something, step in.
Now, that's I'm drawing the concept of conversations with God, actually talking to God, doesn't mean that he necessarily responds verbally in that your ears pick up.
Correct.
For you, is that do thoughts arrive in your mind, or do you have sensations, insight? What's that experience
like?
A
shift in perspective occurs, and just a feeling of yes. And that's really what it is. It's like when one of the times I was in church, you know, for these noontime things, and there started to come this young man who was obviously in his 20s, but crying every day. So after about a week, I walked up to him and I said, can I help you? This was after Mass. And he said, my wife just died, and I've got a 2-year-old, and I'm devastated. And so we talked. Now, that's what I mean about an opportunity. You know, most people would have just said, oh, that's too bad, and then walked away. We talked. And every day, he would talk to me, and I would just listen, primarily. We invited him and his child to the house, because we had children about the same age, and we have 7 children. So we always had children about that age. And he would, he eventually found himself, and he actually remarried about 3 years later. But that's a simple thing, but it's the kind of things that anybody can do if they see something going on.
So, and it just it really came naturally to you that way. I think
yes.
I'm looking here at some notes and going the variety of contact you've studied over the years. Since you're already talking about conversations with God, you'd mentioned
right.
that you fell upon Neil Donald Walsh's book Conversations with God one day in a bookstore.
Yeah,
how has he impacted you?
It was, I did a lot of travel for work, and I was out in California, probably 95, 96, somewhere in that time frame. and out in the Sunnyvale area. And like always, I don't watch TV. I didn't watch TV back then, and I don't now. But I wandered around and go to bookstores, Barnes and Nobles or, you know, whatever, and go through books. There was this pile of books called Conversation with God sitting on the floor. And I had to pick it up. It was driven to me. And that's the kind of thing that when you get that kind of a feeling, you do it. And because I learned that that's God speaking to me. And so I did. I bought the book, and I read that, and I've read all of the Conversation with God books and quite a few of the others that Neil Donald Walsh published. And particularly that first book said yes, because I had arrived at certain conclusions about God that kind of was in slight disagreement with the Catholic Church, and that's still that way. But with the mainline Catholic Church, there were alternative approaches within the Catholic Church, such as by Father Richard Rohr and the Franciscan priest approach, which is that as St. Francis of Assisi, that is very similar to what you find within the Conversation of God book, particularly book one, of God speaking and that. And I felt very comfortable with the fact that God spoke to him. Okay, he spoke to him through the writing in the book. But as he said later, these weren't a forced writing, but by hand, these are thoughts in his head that he then transposed into the book. And which is pretty much the way God and I speak, and we still do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I talk to God every day for an hour or so, 45 minutes to an hour. And it's just one of these things that afterwards I have kind of, okay, this is where I am today.
That's beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful. I know that you are an engineer and a scientist. And
right.
And along the way, you became involved in quantum energy or quantum physics or quantum consciousness. How does that relate into this philosophy life sense of life for you?
Yeah. As I said, my way back when I was in college, I became interested in astrophysics. And I was going to become a radio astronomer, a physicist, but I decided not to. And at that point, that was just a very budding science. It started back in the 50s, about 10 years before that. And that was all brand new. But I loved science, obviously. And because I read so much, I got my hands on every book that I could find that explained the physics and I don't necessarily understand the mathematics, but I understand the way people think about the mathematics, what the mathematics is saying. And like Einstein had originally arrived at the conclusion that material things is just balls, what I call balls, it's not really, but that's something like balls of energy bound together through attractive forces and how they're locked into one another. And that's matter, but it's energy. Everything is energy. And I have said to myself, if everything is energy, what is energy except a force field that permeates the universe? That's like the body of God, the physical body of God, is is this invisible thing that we call energy that becomes matter, which is only a small portion of the total energy and that we see. It's all the universe, all the trillions of stars and galaxies and so forth make up about 4% of what we know of what the energy is in this small containment that we call the universe. And that's all relative, of course. So I feel very comfortable trying to relate relating the universe and physics to God and a religion. I believe that because God is everything, God contains me and everybody else, and therefore we're all one. There isn't any difference between us. We're all this energy bounds without limits that make up this particular portion that we can at least taste a little of.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I bound quantum physics into my faith.
To relate, yes, it's a profound way to do it. Asmit Goswami, I believe, is the physicist that became a writer, and he asked us all to become quantum activists in relating to quantum consciousness how God the Creator, how it all works, and how we interplay with that in the creative process. And his work profoundly influenced me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, when you get down to it, there can be no differences between faith in God and science. They're the same thing, just using different words.
Mm-hmm. Now, your book is entitled The 12 Steps to Joy and Happiness, Finding the Kingdom of God That Lies Within, Luke 17:21.
Right.
Now, I assume that means that you also discovered 12-step work in this process.
I did. I was struggling. I have depression, and it's what they've determined to be clinical depression. It's just my hormonal levels are a bit low in certain areas that caused me to become depressed, I just have been studying through the many things that I've been reading back in the 1980s about the 12-step movements and about their absolutely wonderful way of bringing people out of some really extremely challenging areas. And I stumbled into an approach to the 12-step that is broad termed. It isn't just for alcohol or drugs or a substance or even things like spendaholics and things like this. It's for a normal physical problems also, like depression. And I found out by using the 12 steps and adjusting their wording so it fit more with me, I could truly live a much better life. I worked in that field for about 20 years, working with all kinds of people, from people like myself down to drug addicts and alcoholics, part-time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was raising 7 children and at the same time extremely busy at work. So it's been an interesting life. I found the 12 steps themselves to be extremely important, and they tied right back into my faith with God, because the key to the 12 step, to working the 12 step, is surrender to your higher power, or God. And I use the word God instead of that, because that's how I feel. But to surrender to your higher power within you let yourself go. And if you can truly surrender, you fall into this thing that is that allows you to relax and say, okay, God will take care of everything. And God will.
So,
if you do
so you wrote, right, so you wrote this book. How long did it take you to write?
It took me 2 years.
2 years, okay. And what does it consist of? I think I wrote down a quick note that said 39 meditations on a variety of topics.
Yeah. It's it starts off with about 17 or 18 talking about what it is to be with God. And I call that the life of abundance. Because it's not having stuff. It's internally letting yourself go with God. And then I use the 12 steps, and I have modified the wording of most of the steps to a certain extent, some of them extensively. But there's still, I try to keep the same 12 step flow that the original 12 steps had of recognition you got a problem, giving it over to the higher power, and then working on the aspects of things that prevent you from being able to surrender totally. There's always parts of you that don't want to go. And then how do you carry that forward? And then the last third of the book is actually various methods of quiet time, of actually spending time with God, which can happen there's a gazillion different ways. I just chose them in seven or eight different approaches with that.
Well, I look at it and I didn't even know where to start, to be honest, because we could be on the phone for hours and hours talking about each one of these 12 steps.
We could.
And the solutions and the quest for, how you move forward and all these different things. Probably you had the same problem in writing. Which do you actually know which ones you believe are the most important?
It's the third step where you give yourself over. It's probably the most important thing. But then how do you sustain it? And that's the last steps. Every day, spend time. It can only be 5 minutes, perhaps, but spend time surrendering. You say, okay,
now,
God, you got this.
That you've got this. I give it up. You can take care of it.
Yeah.
Well, now, you are, do you have a sense that God is love?
Oh, yes. God is love, but I sit here trying to think about how to phrase this. God is pure love, but pure love is compassion. It's being able to put yourself into others, and it's not. To love yourself, which is the critical part, means that you love others. You have to, otherwise you don't love yourself. And it's the key that you recognize we're all one, such as what the physics has told me. You're all one. And since we're all part of this universe, we're all part of this energy field, which is God, God will help. You know, to go through and to wash my wife, I'd say slide down. She was fortunate that her cancer, it wasn't too debilitating for most of the time. The last 6 weeks was extremely hard. But it was a method that she died 60 years to the day that we met.
No, isn't that something?
So yeah. It was one of these one of these things that, you know, when it happened, I had to look back at my calendar stuff. I said, yep, this is the day. And it was, in, I can look back in those 60 years with tremendous gratitude that I was given the gift of this beautiful person in my life. And that bitterness that she was taken from me. Because that's part of life.
You had a good life with her. Now, it is pain and suffering. You're watching pain and suffering. You see it in other people. You certainly see it with the people who are struggling with their various addictions. When we say that God is love and it is all one and we are all, you know, part of this being, how do we reconcile pain and suffering?
You're asking the impossible question. The same way Jesus did. Jesus accepted it. In fact, that's who he... Pain and suffering help us see the universality of the world. Without pain and suffering, that you end up becoming self-absorbed. I don't need anybody but myself. So pain and suffering are actually part of the world. You know, those of us who are older have watched friends die, have watched their parents die, of course, all the family. And it just, you become accepting the fact that this is part of the ebb and flow of life itself. The entire world is actually made to die. The universe is. At different time spans, but the universe itself is proceeding towards death. So death is not something that is terrible. It's part of being born and accepting a life as a whole. I'm not sure if I made myself clear, but I tried.
No, but I mean, that is a very important recognition. I think when we think in terms of the end of a universe, the end of a planet or a star, I know you see it from that scientific standpoint that there is there is an end time to everything. We just don't know when it is. And what happens to all of us at that point in time? And, you know, all the arguments that go on about end times from the Christian point of view in the book of Revelations, you know, there's a lot of, you know, are we coming? Are we going? You know, what, you know, are we all destroyed in a fiery pit? But I know you don't see it that way.
As soon as we're all living in our end times, we will die. Therefore, you know, to me at least, those that are prophesizing that they're going to get lifted up to heaven and so forth and so on without dying, they don't want to die. I hate to break the spell, but sorry. Just like Jesus, we will die. You know,
and what does that say for the future? What's your vision of what heaven will be? Or is there a heaven?
Well, there is something. And just like Jesus said, I cannot conceive of what it is. My mind, we go on pretty much as we are. The way we live this life is the way we will live that life. And if you find joy and happiness here, you'll find joy and happiness there. If you don't find joy and happiness here, well, it's hard to say what you'll find when you go there.
Interesting. But, and so where does forgiveness fit in all of this?
What's that?
Where does forgiveness fit in this?
Forgiveness? That's an interesting one. I have found through the years that I no longer have to forgive anybody because there is nothing anybody can do that will injure me, if you see what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
They may say certain things, they may do certain things, but that's their problem. It's not mine. Therefore, the goal of forgiveness is to reach the point where it is not necessary, in my mind. You have nothing to forgive because nobody can hurt you. I think Jesus put it so well hanging on the cross, his very last words, when he said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do."
Mm-hmm.
So people who do things that hurt you, they know not what they do. So therefore, they did nothing wrong themselves.
I can understand that there are so many times people really don't understand. They don't even have an idea that they're hurting someone, and yet they do.
Yeah.
And so if you're in a strong enough place within yourself, you don't have to forgive them because they don't understand what they're doing.
Right.
Very, very. It is a profound concept, though, to be able to reach that point where you're no longer looking at that.
That is one of the gifts that, if you are fortunate, that you get with age.
Something to look forward to. David, where can people find your book?
It is on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any of the online bookstores. I don't know if there may be some of the smaller bookstores carry it, but it's primarily can be purchased either e-books or else hardcover books, softcover and hardcover, online.
And do you have a website where, and if they go to your website, what do they find there?
I've been writing a blog for 6 or 7 years now. I've forgotten when I started. It was somewhere back around 1979. I was 79 or 80 at that point. And it's the past year, past 2 years, when my wife was diagnosed with cancer, I publish something every Sunday, and I write it during the week beforehand. And I talk about the week that went on. So I went through the whole process of her becoming ill, diagnostics, the chemo treatments, radiation treatments, and so forth, up to her death. And then I changed it slightly to what happens to me a sensor.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just published them a week 44 for following her death. And so it's a process that, and a lot of people have found it very helpful because I find it very therapeutic, you might say, to dump my feelings onto the keyboard every week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is who I am, folks, right now.
And that's an important thing to share. I think so many people, when they start to search for answers and to deal with the intense emotions that they're feeling and the actions that they take, they need to turn to someone. They need to see someone who's going through it.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, in truth, you know, when this podcast began in its first iteration, it was called Rebuilding Your Life, Moving from Disaster to Prosperity. And it was a journey. It was the journey that I took after we lost our home to a landslide. But the emotions, the mental attitude, the spiritual attitude that you change and shift and move through is a real journey, a real spiritual journey that we all take. And I think so many people are searching for those answers, searching for examples.
I lost my home to a house fire back in 1984, mm-hmm. and we rebuilt in the same place. And but it was you know, everything went. It was just a pile of ashes in the in a hole in the ground.
Yeah.
And so that was a huge awakening time for both my wife and myself.
And I can understand. Yeah.
It is very similar to yours.
Yes. In fact. Yes. It changed. It really changed the trajectory of my life at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everything shifts.
Yes. So, what is the? How do you spell your website name? I know it's not just David Peters.
Wait, it's David Lendon, L-E-N-D-O-N, Peters, all one word. David Lendon, and that's spelled L-E-N-D-O-N, Peters, all one
.com. Okay. Well, thank you very much for being with us today, David. You know, I really enjoy hearing how 12-step work has influenced you and contributed to your ability to be of service to others, and these other influences that came in from, you know, the Catholic, your upbringing, and the Thomas Merton book, and you know, there's so many that your quantum
yes.
science, you know, how it fill it's just amazing how God has revealed himself to you throughout your entire life. So thank you very much for sharing it with us, and thank you for the work you're doing. Yeah, and sharing your story now with others who will be facing similar situations.
Yes.
I'd also like to thank, I think it will. It's one of those things that we really do, you know, it's only by finding other people that we are, you know, who are going through what we go through that we learn how to.
Right.
To deal with it ourselves. So I'd also like to thank our listeners who joined us today, reminding them that we've been speaking with David Peters about his book, The 12 Steps to Joy and Happiness, Finding the Kingdom of God That Lies Within, Luke 17:21, which is available on Amazon and several other internet booksellers. Remember, we support the work of authors when we buy, recommend, or give copies of their books to others. You can also support the work of this program at the anchor.fm podcast site. It's called Train Your Brain, Claim Your Power. You can like us, follow us, subscribe, or become a sponsor. And to stay connected with our community of authors, email Susan at susanshereko.com, and I will spell that for you, S-U-S-A-N, SHEREAYKO.com, and ask to subscribe. So thank you for letting us give authors a voice today. So thank you again for being with us, David.
And thank you much for having me. I appreciate it. Really do.
And I appreciate your being here. So once again, it's time to go, everyone. Bye for now, and have a great day.
Thank you very much for tuning in today. If you've been inspired by this show, leave a rating or review on iTunes and visit www.rainbowsoverruins.com to receive a free chapter from Susan's book. On behalf of Susan Shereko, this has been Rebuilding Your Life, Moving from Disaster to Prosperity, sharing the journeys of those affected by sudden and great loss and what they did to heal, rebuild, and where they are now.